Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on July 27th, 2020, from James Island. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at the latest DHEC data, which is showing declining infection rates. We hear more about the Phase 4 relief plan Congress is looking at. We look at encouraging budget data from the state and what one hospital is doing to combat the COVID-19 surge it's facing. We also hear about what state Democrats want to do to safeguard the general election this November and so much more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and just what's going on in your world. We'd love to hear from you. Talk about if you've been tested for COVID-19, if someone in your family has contracted it, any of your situations dealing with the ongoing pandemic. We'd be very interested to hear from you. Again, 1 to 3 minute long message at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 1,436 deaths, and currently there are 80,856 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of July 27th at 4 p.m. And of note, on July 25th, we had a new record of deaths reported at 74 in one day. You might also roll your eyes when I say the cumulative case numbers, but think about this. 51% of those 80,856 cases happened in July alone. We still have days left in the month. Also, 653 deaths, or about 46%, have occurred in July as well. So these are some simply stunning numbers of the worst kind. Additionally, as of July 24th, 150 nursing home and assisted living residents have died from COVID-19, and 4 staff members as well, over the previous 30 days. To date, a total of 550 residents have died from COVID-19. Also, DHEC is still working on hospitalization reporting numbers, so I don't have those for you, but we do have a bright spot in the otherwise dark data that we're talking about here. Infection rates have dropped from 21.6% on July 23rd to now 14.6% on July 26th. That's the lowest rate we've seen for more than 28 days. We peaked on July 12th at 22.3%, so this is really great news to see our infection rate going to 14.6%. Now we just need to continue to slow the spread to help frontline professionals and as schools gear up to return this fall. So a lot riding on that infection rate there. In Washington, we're continuing to follow the latest on what's happening with the Phase 4 COVID relief bill. Republicans are expected to release their $1 trillion plan soon, but one key part of it was disclosed on Monday, and that's dealing with the federal unemployment money. National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow spoke with reporters Monday outside the White House about ongoing negotiations on the second round of coronavirus stimulus spending and the upcoming expiration of the $600 weekly boost in unemployment benefits.
Our plan provides retention credits for the employer, and our plan provides for a re-employment bonus. And I don't want to let go, there hasn't been much written. Our plan provides an extension and an increase in the PPP program, the Payroll Protection Program. So we're really putting a lot of assistance money in, and we just don't want to set up a situation where we've had so many complaints that it's tough to rehire because the total unemployment is way above the wages. So we're just trying to even that out, create a standard. We're pouring assistance into the economy. There's just no question about that. And I think it'll work out. But I got to tell you, even with some of the big states' difficulties, I acknowledge that. But nonetheless, the economic numbers are still coming out strong. We have a huge increase today in machinery and equipment, beat the street. We've had job gains. The weekly claims look great. I think July's unemployment rate and jobs rate, I don't have a forecast yet. I haven't seen the numbers, but I think it's going to be a solid number. There's a housing boom going on. There's auto sales and production are booming. The trucking story continues to improve, and the retailing story continues to improve.
Again, the federal unemployment assistance of $600 a week for unemployed South Carolinians expired on Saturday, and some 30 million Americans are on unemployment assistance right now, with the unemployment rate for June at 11.1% nationwide. Again, Republicans are proposing to drop that $600 to $200 until states can update computers to compensate workers at 70% of their paychecks. But Kudlow also acknowledged other factors will moderate the ongoing recovery, and he has already seen some promising data from health officials.
Now, I will say this, I'll let her speak for herself, but over the weekend I'm communicating with Ambassador Deborah Birx, who's a great friend, and she's beginning to see now some stabilization in these big states and much, much improvement in Arizona. I have my fingers crossed, and I'm praying that be the case. But don't forget, please, the whole Northwest is, the whole Northeast is open. And that's a big GDP chunk, and it extends to the Midwest in most cases because you got your car plants and your manufacturing plants going. So I'm just trying to create perspective. We are scouring the numbers to see how much moderation there is, and I will be fact-based and truthful with you on that every step of the way.
Kudlow has previously said that there will be $1,200 relief checks in the plan as well as an extension of the federal eviction moratorium. Again, a lot to watch this week as negotiations continue to ramp up, and as of our taping, Senate Republicans have not unveiled their plans. Moving from Washington to Columbia, in the South Carolina Senate, Democratic leader Nikki Setzler has sent a letter to Senate President Harvey Peeler, a Gaffney Republican, requesting lawmakers return as soon as possible to address voting concerns ahead of the November general election. This comes days after State Election Commission Director Marcy Andino penned a letter to State House leaders outlining several concerns that she believes require legislative action, such as reinstating the state of emergency reason that allows every voter the option to vote absentee, allowing voters to apply for an absentee ballot online, removing the witness requirement for absentee return envelopes, allowing the use of drop boxes for return of absentee ballots, providing election officials with more time to process absentee by mail ballots, or to extend the date in which counties must certify the results of the election, and also allow curbside voting to take place at designated locations instead of every polling place. Yeah, so a bunch of little things that will add up to a lot of big changes if they implement them. Again, we did see that increase in absentee mail voting in the primary elections this past June, but we also saw lines at some areas that were bottlenecked due to consolidating of precincts. So we've seen this before, and it looks like they're just trying to get ahead of it, but we'll find out when lawmakers do come back. We know they're coming back in September to head up some issues, but there's a little bit of a worry that that might be a little too close for comfort. So we'll follow that as it develops. And also just a little note, Andino estimates that more than 1.6 million absentee ballots will be cast in November. And as we head out some national news, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien has tested positive for COVID-19. O'Brien is the closest person to the president known to have the virus, and the White House said he has posed no risk to President Donald Trump or Vice President Mike Pence and is only experiencing mild symptoms. Last week, state economists revealed some good budget news. The state eked out a $220 million surplus for the past fiscal year, which just ended on June 30th. Yes, they got my taxes, Gavin. Why do I care? Why are you telling me this? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the state won't be dipping into reserves or making any cuts to cover any shortfalls. That's great news to hear that we have a budget surplus. It also means that we have a little cushion for lawmakers to work with when they craft a budget in September. That's when they return for a two-week special session. So another good economic indicator. Granted, the pandemic started rocking the state in the final 4 months of the fiscal year, it's still encouraging to see that money coming in. Now, Frank Rainwater, who's the State Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Executive Director, was upbeat on a conference call last week when he discussed this.
Our revised forecast that we did in May after adjusting for the COVID-19, our revised forecast estimated a $40 million surplus. That $40 million surplus was contingent upon us getting about $123 million in this income tax accrual. As Hartley just noted, we've gotten closer to $308 million, or about $180 million higher. So it looks like our surplus for this fiscal year is going to be about $220 million. Of course, that's depending on sales tax and some other factors, but the encouraging sign is that it looks like the state's going to get through this fiscal year without dipping into the reserve funds and having a revenue surplus. budgetary surplus. That is dependent upon, though, the Comptroller General will release the official numbers around August 14th. But from our forecast, it looks like the delayed income tax payments came in as expected.
While this was welcome news, news that many states would envy right now, we are not out of the woods yet. Education Improvement Act funding came in lower than expected, as did motor fuel taxes. But the lottery spending was picking up because people were feeling a little lucky or spending that relief money. Don't know. But here's what Frank had to say.
EIA revenues are below estimates. We don't think the accrual will catch those up. So we're worried about a shortfall in the Education Improvement Act funds. That could be anywhere from $10 to $20 million, depending on if this last month goes out. So we're waiting to see. Hopefully it'll only be about closer to the 10. But even though the general fund is doing well, EIA is not doing quite as well. Lottery came in higher than the February estimate. We did not reduce the lottery estimate for COVID-19. We kept the estimate the same. But even after all said and done, the lottery came in higher than originally projected for this fiscal year. So those funds came in. Motor fuel DOT revenue, or motor fuel revenue, was only about $22 million below the revised estimate. Again, they benefited from the accrual. There were some delayed payments, but traffic counts have improved. So DOT is not where they hoped to be, but is better than what we were fearing early on in the activity.
And we'll be getting some new GDP and second quarter GDP numbers on Thursday. So more insight there on how the country is doing. And also, Boeing has its second quarter earnings call on Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. We'll have highlights in Thursday's podcast. Officials at Regional Medical Center gave a briefing on Monday, July 27th, about the field hospital going up outside the facility in Orangeburg that will house healthier patients as COVID-19 surge is pressuring current bed space. Matt Hinkle, Vice President of Operations, said the tents, or as he calls it, an alternative care site at the hospital, will be for ambulatory patients who are set to be discharged within a day. Now, if activated, the site will help free up much-needed beds inside the hospital for more acute patients.
So in reference to the alternative care site, is what we would like to deem it as, not just a field hospital, but an alternative care site. We'd like to utilize that facility to help us offload some capacity that we have internally. So as Charles alluded to, we originally started with about six negative pressure rooms, and we quickly built that out foreseeing into the future of the need as this pandemic grew into March, that we would have to create additional capacity of negative pressure spaces in our hospital. And we were able to do that. We were able to ramp up to about 44, which was able to take care of our needs for the community for a period of time, especially while South Carolina was shut down. We had many businesses that were on lockdown, and so we didn't see the high incidence and high positive rate that we're seeing now. So that worked for several months for us, but we also had to expand into other areas of the hospital and create additional negative pressure spaces. So now we're up to about 71, and that taxes our HVAC system very much because the negative pressure space does not allow us to send return air back to the HVAC system. And so we have to really monitor the humidity and the temperature of these spaces very routinely in order to maintain temperature. And so we had to start thinking about when we saw the number of potential admissions cap over that 40 into the 50s and 60s, we needed to start thinking about how else can we care for patients. And so we worked with the South Carolina Emergency Management Division, Orangeburg County Emergency Management Division, DHEC, in order to put together a plan that will allow us to offshift some of that capacity that we're seeing inside to the exterior of the building.
The sites will be staffed by hospital and some contract employees who are in high demand right now across the state and country. Over the next 3 weeks, the tent site will be outfitted with HVAC, beds, plumbing, and more, and will make RMC the first hospital to have such capabilities, though places like MUSC have previously converted other facility spaces into overflow for the hospital. Now, RMC officials call this a proactive measure, especially as the 162-bed hospital continually flirts with capacity on a daily basis. Dana Dalton is the chief nursing officer at the hospital, and she gave a glimpse of the difficulties in acquiring contract medical professionals to help keep the facility staffed as employees contract the virus.
We are in very, very high competition for those 800 staff members that are available across the state of South Carolina. And as we have more and more staff members that are getting sick or becoming infected with COVID or having to stay home to take care of loved ones and be self-isolated because of that COVID contact every single day, that determines the amount. So that number truly is a moving target. As in, for instance, we were able to bring on two agency staff members today, but now we have two staff members that are out due to COVID. So it's really a system of checks and balances. We have, though, been lucky enough to procure quite a few of those agency staff members or those travel nurses. So that is something that's large on the horizon for us. And we're going to see those nurses continue to filter in to help support us through the month of August.
Orangeburg County has the fifth highest infection rate per 100,000 people in the state and the 10th highest death rate, with 47 deaths as of Monday, July 27th. Dr. John Sammies, Chief of Medical Staff and RMC Medical Director of Infection Control, spoke frankly about what is driving the disturbing rates.
As upticked, and in fact, that's really part of the reason for the tent. We saw an uptick and we wanted to be ahead of it. In fact, we've actually been working at this since, believe it or not, the first week in February to have plans for what to do with patients, how to increase our availability of negative pressure rooms, how to try and staff them with limited staffing, knowing that our staffing numbers were going to go down when people became ill. So this is something that's really gone on for a while. The uptick, I think, has been in part because people let their guard down, to be honest. They started traveling a bit more, started congregating a bit more. We've had a couple of holidays in there, if you recall. And I think that, unfortunately, until someone in your household is ill or dies, it isn't real to you. And people have avoided doing the things that are appropriate, like hand hygiene, like masking, like social distancing. And I think that's why Orangeburg County now has its uptick.
So there you have it, guys, a glimpse of the challenges facing just one hospital in our state as they try and combat the virus without becoming completely overrun. We're seeing measures being taken by hospitals across the state to maintain control, but as cases rise and the number of hospitalizations continue to increase and the number of patients on ventilators increase, it's hard to see the other side of this at this point. But again, like we said earlier, infection rates have been dropping, so we might be catching a break soon. Now, this is our wind-down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you going to work? Are you unemployed? Are you a medical professional on the front lines of this pandemic? Have you been tested for COVID-19? Has someone you know been directly affected by COVID-19? We're very interested in hearing these stories because they're important to put them out in the public so people can get a better idea about really what's going on out there. And you can tell us that at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and a 1 to 3 minute long message at 803-563-7169. And that being said, AT, do we have any calls?
We do. We have a call from an unnamed teacher. She doesn't want us airing her name, so secret teacher.
All right, let's get that upstate.
Let's roll this secret tape.
Yes.
Secret tape, say it, roll it, secret.
Roll it. There it is.
Beep. All right. First of all, I am a teacher. I think that we're going to create a generation of orphans because probably 30% of our student population is being raised by their grandparents. Also, not being able to see students, if we go back and they have to wear masks, it's going to be really problematic because we can't read their emotions. We don't know if they're smiling and if they're about to flip out and punch somebody or if they're happy or if they're crying. We might not be able to see. Well, we can see their eyes, but anyway. Also, teaching is going to have to be completely upended because all the things that we've been taught to do, we can't do anymore, which is just like everything else in life. I have depression, and so I like to work. I was working at the gas station. TT, My boss told me to get tested. I got tested, and then I took two leave of absences from QT because they're 3 months each. My dad said that I was going to kill everyone, and he said he was going to disinherit me if I gave him COVID. I was living with my parents. My dad is going to be 70 in August. My mom is 58. My grandma is 89. She just stays in her bedroom and gets out from hibernation to get ice cream or get some more soda. I got engaged April 7th, and we don't really know what we're doing. We're probably going to do something really small because we can't really do anything typical.
Well, teacher, thanks for that insight and that look at what it will be like for the state of education. I know a lot of people are concerned about that right now. And also, congratulations on the engagement. I guess it's good that you have all the time to plan for it right now because yeah. Who knows what the next 12, 24 months will be looking like. So I know my brother was happy that he got married last October because I know they would have been just freaking out. And if you have a wedding story, we'd love to hear about it. You know, we'll give you some pity for sure because that's just must have been so difficult. 803-563-7169. Tell us. If you were going to have a wedding this year, we'd love to hear about
it. I would have loved to have a smaller wedding, man. Big wedding was a lot of work.
Mm.
Sheesh. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you could do something small and then just, you know, have a big blowout, you know, in a year or two or whatever.
Something like just have a party, you know, my friends, they got married at a courthouse and then they're just going to have a party when all this is over.
Yeah. That's what
I think that's the coolest way to do it.
Yeah. Boom, boom.
For sure.
Just hurts all the people affected in the wedding industry, but you know, that's everyone's hurting. So, AT, we had a weekend. What's going on with you? Tell me what's the latest.
I'm kind of sad that baseball's already a wreck. We're 3 days in.
yeah, right? Nationals didn't even finish that game, right?
No. The Marlins are already, everyone is sick, so like they can't play that. It's pizza night, so big pizza night tonight.
Pizza night. And, oh, wow. Okay. Is it on a bagel?
It's not on a bagel. It is going to be a full-fledged pizza. Three pizzas, two small ones and a big one.
Oh.
That's right. I was hoping you would be here, but you're not going to be here because you're a bad guy.
Very bad.
And then my biggest news is that my wife, Caitlin, she thinks there's an animal living in our attic right now.
Oh, my God. Do we have an alert for that?
Yeah. It could be a snake alert. Who knows? It could be a giant snake living out there.
You could have one giant snake living in your attic.
I don't personally think there's anything up there.
Because so she's just being a little imaginative, right?
No, we just had friends who found animals in their attic.
Ooh.
And then 3 days later, she thinks there's things in our attic.
Of course.
So, and there are big trees over our house. Squirrels mess around on our roof. And I've, for years, gone up into the attic just to make sure there are no squirrels in the attic. And I've never seen anything. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Listeners can be assured that if there is any animal up there, we will keep it. We'll name him Leedy, and he will be the mascot for the podcast.
You're going to domesticate a raccoon for us.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many rabies I get, because I'm just going to love him to death. I'm going to love him to death. Did you know that the best, it says the best way to catch raccoons on this cage box that I bought? I bought a cage to catch the raccoon. That doesn't exist. It says to catch it, you put marshmallows out.
Oh. Trash food for a trash animal.
those trash pandas, they got sweet tooth.
Well, I mean, and if you don't catch anything, you can always try and get the cats in there and have a good old time. They can get all stuck and all crazy.
Just joke around.
Get all crazed out there. I kind of want to take bets on what it might be here.
Okay, what do you think?
If it's not a spirit, okay, that's the first one. You know, if it's not a poltergeist, then I'm going to say...
If it's not a specter or
a phantasm
a phantasm. If it's not one of those, I mean, the money will be... You basically have three choices, okay?
Squirrels
and easy
bet.
Four if you count giant snake, okay? But I'm not going giant snake.
Yeah.
I'm going A... possum.
Raccoon.
C, squirrel.
Squirrel might be the easy money, obviously. I think C. Yeah.
I think raccoon's easy money, but I'm going to take the dark horse. I'm going to take the possum.
Ooh, yeah. Watch me
only, only marsupial in North America. Yeah, that's right. Sound like Rudy Mankey over here.
I think out of all those, I guess the squirrel's definitely the cutest one, and then the raccoon, and then possum. I mean, I think the evil spirits
raccoons
are
cute.
Raccoons, not possums though.
Possums are ugly. They are.
Yeah, and if you have
there's a lady I saw on Instagram who just like she like raises possums. She like, you know how like dog people, gross dog people, they kiss their dogs on the mouth and let them lick in their mouth? She was doing that with possums.
No, no. There will be no link in our show notes, folks. You have to do that on your own. Gross. That's like raising pigeons. Like, why?
Are you disparaging the pigeon lady from Home Alone 2?
Oh, you heard it here first. I don't think I've ever said anything positive about pigeons.
Wow. Pigeon lady was great. I'm sorry. You're going to get a lot of hate mail. You're
sorry that I'm offending your national, your state bird up there in Jersey, AT, but that's just what it is.
The state bird is either the middle finger or an Italian hoagie that someone threw at someone in a fit of rage.
God, that sounds sacrilegious. So yeah, let us know your animal control nightmares. We'd love to hear them.
And, yeah, if I'm doing it all wrong, please let me know.
Yeah, we want to know. 803-563-7169. Tell us what you've been up to, what you've been doing. We want to hear from you all. And again, thanks for listening to the pod. You can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review or a voicemail, like I said, 803-563-7169. And stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers, folks. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. So again, if you've reached the bottom of Netflix or Hulu, check out PBS Passport. You get access to that at the $75 member support level. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Talk about what we're talking about.
I don't care.
I'm completely nihilist today, okay?
I told you I don't care. Shut up.
So we're not even going to do marks, okay? I don't even want.
Just shut up.
Oh, Caitlin, it's Gavin. I just got off with AT and things sound a little dire. You better make sure the pizza's good tonight to bring them back to zero. I don't care what's on the pizza, Kate. I don't care.
Shut up. I don't care. I don't.
Throw it away. I don't want it.
I don't care. Oh, Chippy's trying to get in his box again.